now. He goes on the offensive. He goes on the attack over the top of this final climb, and nobody at the moment can go with him.
He had 75 kilometers to go, and now under the Flamme Rouge, there he is still, the virtual Malia Rosa on the road. Who'd have thought it at the start of today? But Chris Froome, masterful performance, takes the win on top of Sir Jaffra.
And that's Chris Froome. Piece of cake for him winning, stage 19 of the Giro 2000 something or other? Maybe it was stage 17 of the 2019 Giro. I don't know. What happened to my music? It went off. Anyway, welcome everybody. This is the Between Two Wheels podcast. I thought we would do, I told you, I said, hey, we're going to do this show every Sunday. Sunday came, I wasn't here. The next Sunday came, I still wasn't here. It's been a while, which means you don't get listeners and followers that are supposed to be doing this. But I thought it was time that we get back into things. And look at that. This is the new helmet situation over there at Jumbo or Visma Lisa Bike. So we're gonna go and recap the races. Okay. We're going to recap some of the races that have happened since the last time I brought this in, which was back in the Tour d'Unenda days. And so we're going to talk about UAE Tour, O Gran Camino, KBK, Omelette Nieuwsblad. We got Strada Bianca. Anyway, so we're going to go through all these, a bunch of these, and break them down. But what happened today was I was listening to this podcast. This is Greg LeMond. And I thought it was like 2 hour video, 2 hour podcast with him. With the guy's name is I don't know his name personally, but it's the Roadman podcast, and he gets a lot of views. So I thought I would play this thing here, three clips here of Greg LeMond, because it's pretty fascinating. Some of the things he says. First one we're talking about is Armstrong. Do you have any sympathy type of thing for him? Because he talks about doping. And by the way, I think Greg LeMond is one of the more interesting interviews that you can have out there. He's really smart about everything. He remembers all the races he does very well. And this one particularly piques my interest for one reason, which is everyone always talks about the 89 Tour. And he just came out with this documentary called The Last Rider. And it's pretty good. It's all about the 89 Tour leading up to it, the family, all those things. He and his wife, Kathy, getting, you know, a contract to move over to Europe, blah, blah, blah. But this one, they talk a little bit more about 1990. And for me, 1990 Tour is very interesting with Greg LeMond, because Greg gets Chiappucci, gets a 10-minute lead up there with Ronan Pensick, his own teammate. Steve Bauer's up there and for 7-Eleven. Steve Bauer ends up in the yellow jersey for a little bit. Then Penzic does, and then Chiappucci, and then Greg LeMond has to claw his way back. He's remember, 89, he wins the Tour de France, then 89, he also wins World Championships in France, I believe, as well, over Konashev, Steven Roach. Those are the main guys. And by the way, Fignon was up there in that break as well. Fignon breaks away up on the top of the climb. They chase him down, da-da-da, just the whole thing of it. But the 1990 Tour, he comes in there as the world champ, wearing the Stars and Stripes, or not the Stars and Stripes, the world championship banners, the rainbow jersey. And he slowly claws his way back, and he said he wasn't in great shape. He had Epstein-Barr earlier on the year. He had trouble, but he clawed his way and never wins a stage of the Tour that year. I've always thought of it as one of his more interesting. One, he has first time he has a really good team. And anyway, I thought it was really good. So I would just say this podcast out, this segment over here. But let's listen to this little segment here. I'm going to do three clips. This first one is about Greg LeMond. I'm sorry, Lance Armstrong, and about having any sympathy.
Everybody's doing it. They'd probably try to get away with it. That's why controls and penalties have to be in place, because athletes are humans and they all want to be competitive. And it takes a very special family and with ethics and morals to avoid that. And even then I'm skeptical, because I'm going, I was blessed with a massive talent, a real, really, truly one in a 10 million talent. And so I was already 18 years old. I was winning pro-am races at 19. I was third at Dauphiné with Hino and you know, the Alps. So I felt like I never had to do anything, because I was already there. I was competitive at the moment I turned pro. And I didn't come from a history of any cycling. I came from America. But had I turned pro in 1992 with the same passion I had in cycling, I don't know what I would have done. I'd love to believe I wouldn't do that, but I can't say, because I was back to 1988. I am so lucky that I was injured that year and I was out from PDM, because if I was one time I was vulnerable, I could have been easily convinced to take some stuff to recover. You had a hunting accident, you need this. And had I done that, I think the danger is you have, you take something and you have a good race. You don't think you can do without it. And I truly believe that. I think once riders go, they can never go clean, because it's a big difference.
Can you allow yourself any amount of sympathy for the position that Armstrong found himself in? So he takes EPO. At a certain point, he wins Tour 1, he wins Tour 2, he wins Tour 3. At a certain point now, there's a big support team that are all invested in this Armstrong brand. And there's mechanics, soigneurs, publicists. Everyone's going to lose a job. That the lie gets so big at some point that...
The lie was there before he won the Tour. The lie was there. No, he was... I think that's accepted to Armstrong, is that, you know, Pantani. Pantani wasn't a bully. He wasn't a guy that threatened people. Armstrong got what was given to him because he treated like people like shit and threatened everybody who went against him. But he knew what he was doing. And they still don't think the whole story about Armstrong's victory is just pure EPO. I'm just telling you that it's not, something doesn't add up in his performance. His wattage output versus his VO2 max, even with EPO, doesn't make sense. Even with EPO, he says that the most talented rider in that time was Jan Ulrich by far. And I think that Armstrong, you know, he bribed the UCI in 1999. So he had a get out of jail card that no other rider had. So I don't look him at all like the other riders.
That's okay. So there's a few little items there. One, I want to say, I believe that's completely true about the Lance Armstrong and the bullying aspect, which is he was such a dick that when shit hit the fan, they finally came after him, and then he got no recourse. And then he denied everything from, you know, day one going forward, denied lawsuits out there, you know, trying to ruin people. David Walsh and the Glow or the Guardian, a bunch of these people he was going after. So you've got that aspect of it. Then there is some sympathy, I think, when you read the Lance Armstrong story of Greg talks about it here, which is, And he's fine in a sense of talking about some of these riders of like, and by the way, he knows a lot. He had, he's talking about his team being talked about and offering this stuff. So there's stuff in here he's never really come clean on before, which is pretty amazing. I mean, maybe he has, but I mean, it's just not widespread. Anyway, so he says his other part there is that Lance, I mean, you can have some sympathy for Lance. I think when they decided they had to either compete and do it or not, there's like, you know, the sport is taking them on, you to just give it up. And what else does this loser have? He didn't have a college education. A lot of these guys, so they're just going to give up. And so, you know, maybe the sympathy there, but not at the point that this guy says, oh, look, he's supporting all these people. I'm sorry. Lance Armstrong is such a big piece of shit at that point. You don't really give him that. And also, it's interesting. He's really emphatic about, I mean, Greg LeMond knows his details about training, power meter. He used one. VO2 max is his big be all end all. And he had a huge VO max himself. Greg LeMond, he says he's seen the data. Lance Armstrong didn't. He also says that there's other riders that he says that they didn't have a big VO2 max, but they've doctored it in a way to make them look like they had one to justify that they weren't doping. I think he said Indurain was maybe one of those. Let's go on here to the next one. This portion is called, it's what he thinks is the biggest issue in cycling right now. And let's just keep it at 1.25. It's a normal here. Let's go 1.25 to keep us going.
Yes, continued advancement in medical direct testing. And I said the biggest risk for me in the last 20 years has been motor doping. And I think motor doping has been there since the late 90s, and it's won a lot of big races. And I still think that's a big risk, because I think that if people don't believe it's there, I can promise you it's there. It's in the peloton. Do I see it today? I think I've heard rumors that it could be. It doesn't take a whole lot of help to make a big difference. I try to tell people, you got a power driver, like you buy at a hardware store, like they call it, you got a drill, or you can do a power driver that has a good e-bike motor that for cities is 440 Newton meters of torque. Power driver has 500 Newton meters of torque. And it's got a little battery pack like this big. And you put that on you only need 5 minutes at that. You probably at five minutes on somebody on a climb. And so the hidden motor that I think was used to win many tours that I've had a bike, it's a 250-watt motor that will give you 18 minutes at 250 watts or 30 minutes at 150 watts.
And just to put that in context, so I'm still racing Cat 1, and the difference between me being a local Cat 1 warrior and winning stages in Tour de France, it's a lot less than 100 watts. Like, so absolutely, a 250-watt difference is...
Yeah, so I it's very interesting here how he never says it, but I think he's trying to tie in the Greg LeMond no VO2 max and motor doping, and really, you know, there's things about, like, watch Lance is doing a tugging on his shorts at the time. Okay, let's get this. This last one actually was quite shocking to me, and Greg has no problems just like spilling the beans on everybody. So this one actually kind of warmed my heart. So I'm going to trash this person when he's done trashing him. So let's go to Greg LeMond here. First talking about, what is he talking about here? Oh, so this guy talks about this guy. I don't know his name. The Roadman cyclist podcast guy is an Irish guy. But basically about how, you know, Trek, Greg LeMond talks about how Trek, he's got this lawsuit with them and all the problems because he doesn't say favorable things about Lance. And one of the French newspapers comes out, they did, I think David Walsh had an interview with him, and he comes out and basically says, he's going after my livelihood. And they translated it to, he's going after my life. Then Trek comes after him. So let's just take it from there.
And Trek claimed it did. And then they produced all these supposed emails that I was going to buy a Le Mans, now I'm not going to buy a Le Mans, or I'm not going to buy a Trek. They produced 100 of them before the news even got to the U.S. They're all fake. They did this. And this is kind of the stuff that they, you know, Trek and Armstrong, and they did to me for years.
And you know the hilarious part about that, Greg? It's one of the comments that was on our YouTube, and I must have got, I don't know, tens, if not, you know, 20, 30, 40 DMs or emails from people of various iterations of, I've taken a note here, I'll never buy a Trek or Bell helmets again after watching that last interview. Team Greg.
Okay. It was, I have to say, it was, it impacted me dramatically because I would talk in short sentences. I watched every word I said. You know, go. I had an attorney for bike riders who came up, he'd called me and said, Greg, you know, person you thought was a friend, I'll say it right now, Bob Roll. I don't care if he hears this, was wired. I was in a bike shop in Wheatridge. They sold my bikes, Ron Kiefel's bike shop. And the attorney said somebody, he was wired trying to get you to say something that was libelous. And the goal with Armstrong was to get me to say something
that's
that
they could
threaten me with. Yeah. And so I became very paranoid, whoever I talked to. And I did get...
Okay. So I just thought that was, first of all, Wheatland, that's the bike shop Ron Kiefel owns in Wheatland, Colorado. I actually met Greg, did a bike ride with him at that shop, got to do a ride, you know, it was late 90s. And anyway, it was super, super nice. He was such a nice guy. So was Ron Kiefel. Bob Roll, the big piece of shit, Bob Roll. First of all, I tuned in this morning. So we're going to talk about bike racing. Thank you, Zimny. It comes in here, chimes in and says, Anthony Walsh is the host. Is that a question mark? You put a question mark. I guess it is. Is that his name? It seems like a nice ginger fellow from the UK, from Ireland. So good for him. By the way, as I said, I'm going to try to do these once a week. It's Monday. My wife's out of town. I thought it was a perfect time to do it here. Prefer Sunday nights, but we'll just do what we can do. Anyway, I'm playing some clips here. So he talks about Bob Roll trying to set him up as some sort of libelous action and some defamation. That's insanity. But if you know the relationship of Bob Roll and Greg, Lance Armstrong, which is he goes to what, Green Mountain or something like this, when Lance had his cancer come back, probably helped dope him, probably held the saline, the bags there to do it. And then Bob Roll, of course, you know, as an announcer, has just been one of the muerte in a sense of just the press that covers for him this whole time. I tune in this morning to Perignis. You know, by the way, I've been pretty happy with, I got Max, which is the HBO system. They have a lot of the races, so I'm getting all those, but I also have Peacock, and then, you know, Perignis, some Peacocks. So I go over there. It's Christian Vandeveld and Bob Roll, and my God, it's almost as bad as the Jose Bean chick that does it. Remember, she got into it with Quinn Simmons. That was the one that he gave the high Felicia to. Anyway, we don't need to go down all that route. So I would encourage you. This is a really good interview. First of all, I'm a big fan of, I've mentioned this before. I've gone back and started in the early 80s, as best that I can do, 84, and watched all the tours, and I'm up to like 2013, like every stage. And I was doing this earlier this winter. So I'm a fan of history of cycling, first of all. So that's where you have it. Okay. We had Strada Bianca this last week, this Saturday. But first, before we do that, we should probably talk about what's going on here in wildest time trial helmet yet. Visma Lisa bike unleashes insane new lid at Tirreno Adriatico. Yeah, that is that's hideous. And at some point, you've just got to stop. I mean, there's a limit to what you can do for the. It's Tirreno. I mean, I know they're probably testing some things out. Interesting. I'm sorry, Greg is on my mind here. He talked about the 1990 tour, and if you watch the 89 Tour de France. Yeah, Beluga Whale, Brian says. If you watch the 89 Tour de France, that's the one where Greg has the time trial bars. And by the way, he has a documentary called The Last Rider. It's very good. I think it's on Hulu. I really enjoyed it. I encourage you to go watch it. But it only goes up to the 89 Tour. And 89 Tour, he has the Scott bars, da-da-da-da-da. 1990 Tour, he comes in, and those bars are even. I mean, it's a single. They join at the top, the handle. And he talks about this there where he didn't really train on it. So he does the first time trial. I think he was second or so in the prologues. He did fine, but then there was a long time trial and he didn't do very well. And he's like, I couldn't put the power. It was a bad position. So you have this extreme of if this is good, more is even better. And that's not always the case. This is an example of maybe not always the case. This is this over here, right? This way. Oh, no, this way, this way. This one over here. There you go. That's pretty ugly. Okay, so maybe we need to get right into let's talking about some racing here. So, pro cycling stats. I think we need to go there, and we'll just walk right through some races. So, I think the first one we need to talk about. Let's go to the UAE Tour. That one was. See if we can find it down here. We'll just go down a ways. UAE Tour. So that's out there in the desert, and. You have the first stage. We don't need to go through all the stages, but you're basically getting, I think it was Tim Mellier is either winning or UAE is looking like they're going to win everything. So first stage out here, Tim Mellier, he wins the sprint. He did very good. Some of the sprinters, you've got Cavendish out there. They look okay. Then you had the time trial, and it was all about, they were able to, even though it was the second stage, they were able to set the teams, were able to say in what order they were going out in. Brandon McNulty ends up winning good, and it's McNulty of UAE, Jay Vine UAE, Mikael Bjerg of UAE. The top three right there, Tobias Foss and et al. You got them coming down. So it's all looking very, very fine. The third stage, they go up to Jabal Jais, which is got a climb. There's two climbs there. Third day, and then the seventh day. And Ben O'Connor in the last kilometer basically takes it on and ends up winning this. But coming into this, you, at the bottom of the climb here before this, you had Adam Yates, who is going to look like he's probably the guy that's going to win this out there. He's looking very good. He hits the deck, and his head hits hard. And he gets back in the pack. He's riding along, looking like everything's fine. But you can see that wreck. He goes down on his side back and hits his head smack on the ground. You know instantly it's a head issue. And then he's hanging around at the back. The team's up front. They're all looking kind of good. And then he just pulls out. And, well, he had a concussion. And I could tell watching it there, he goes to his manager and he keeps doing this. One, he's either like over the, it just looked like to me someone who had, you know, when you're hurt bad and you have an injury, and his was a brain injury, where he was probably saying the same thing over and over to this guy. So he's out. And so the team is kind of in flux here. And what do you do? Well, Ben O'Connor ends up taking the win. Very impressive at the last kilometer with a lead out for him, for the Australian. Jay Vine, should have known here, Lennart van Eetveld comes in third. Matthew Riccatello is fine there. Brandon McNulty lose a little bit of time here, but because he had been in the red jersey, and so Jay Vine goes in the front, but you got McNulty. And so basically, then it's all winning for Tim Mellier, stage four, I believe. Yeah, Tim Mellier, stage five, Tim Mellier. Or no, Olaf Coy, he wins up. Stage six. You get Tim Mellier again. But then stage seven into Jabal Hafid. This is the one you're going to say, okay, Jay Vine, maybe he's going to hold on. Plus, you've also got to have McNulty, who's already won a stage race early this year. Everything is looking good for these guys. Or Ben O'Connor, right? So they come into this immediately. I mean, I don't know if you can see there you go, the profile. It's actually from 150, they hit the bottom, and they go all the way to... What's the total distance here for this stage? 161. So it's a good 10 kilometers, but they're climbing all the... So it's a long climb, what they basically have here. And as they hit the bottom, first one out, McNulty. He and his mustache just hit the bricks. You're like, whoops. But soon you've also got... Jay Vine is looking bad, and the whole team, you're like, what the heck? Guys take off the front. You're having issues. Ben O'Connor's looking good. Now they're getting that. There's not many teammates left, and he's chasing everything down. He's doing good. And then Leonard Van Eetveld takes off the last kilometer or so, and he's gone. And he is looking very good. Matter of fact, there's a news report, and he ends up winning the stage. Gets, 2-3 seconds in the GC lead. Ends up winning the overall thing as well over Ben O'Connor. I saw him talking about his training over the winter, and he's like, I've been going so well. At one point, I think this is what he said. He goes, I said to my girlfriend, I think my power meter's broke. Now, I've said the exact same thing, not to a girlfriend, because I don't have one, but to my wife recently, but it's because the power is so low. So that's impressive. And look, Lotto, they got kicked out of the World Tour as far as being one of the automatic teams, so they have to get invites everywhere, and they are winning, and they are doing solid well. Brian chimes in here once again. I want to know how they plan on selling that helmet. Did anyone buy the Duck Bill Puck Tempor helmet? Yeah, that's... Imagine Yad Mate's neck injury crashing in that ridiculous TT helmet. Yeah, that's that's for sure. I don't think the POC, this helmet, the specialized one with the neck thing going on, I don't know if they're really hawking that out to the general public. Maybe for you know, I mean, you got these guys, you know, we know them all here, you know, in the local, the Masters guys, it'll spend thousands of dollars for ridiculous socks or whatnot, and I'm sure they would buy that helmet too. Because if it's, our buddy John Novikov, he was stuffing things in his chest. Because now that's the new thing. You put a fairing like in the chest, like a water bottle or something in your chest, and that's supposed to help. They actually had that at one of the races earlier this year that they were trying to kind of cut down on. So UAE, we're not going to go through all these in depth, but that's the UAE tour or the UAE one. O Gran Camino. Now look. These are races you send your guys out to. UAE is supposed to win this for, that's their home tour. They didn't do so, but I think those guys got sick. And I was trying, it's so frustrating after a race. I want to hear some news reports specifically of the big issues like Brandon McNulty, Jay Vine, what the fuck happened? Now, you know, I heard speculation afterwards. I think they just had a bad day because the crosswinds were so heavy. And it's like, I don't think Brandon McNulty drops at the base of a climb like that when he put everyone into difficulty earlier this year and you know, is perfectly, he was in the race leader, he was in third place. You don't do that when, you know, guys that can't climb are ahead of you. So something was up there. But this O Gran Camino, Vinigo goes out there, first race of the year for him, and he basically takes three stages, I think, just cruises to everything. They had a time trial to begin with. It was so dumb. It was like bad weather. So they said, okay, no TT bikes. I'm fine with that. But then they say, oh, and it doesn't count. And I'm like, I'm not fine. If you're able to do it and you said no TT bikes, if you're not saying it's not going to count, let's let them ride TT bikes. Let's fucking have some fun out there, right? But no, they didn't do it. But Jonas Vingegaard ends up winning the whole thing overall, much like he did last year. But look, this competition is kind of bad. So Josh Tarling wins this thing. Will Barta, the time trial opening up, Will Barta was in the mix in there right up to the end. But it was really boring when it doesn't count because riders like Jonas can just tick it in. So second day, there's rain, bad weather. Jonas, there's mountains finishing. He takes off like last 5, 6, 10 kilometers, whatever. Just destroys. Egan Bernal was on his wheel and then wasn't on his wheel. The next day, he does pretty much the same thing. Wins by 30 seconds. Stage 3 and then stage 4. same thing. Lenny Martinez comes in there. Hugh Carthy, 45 seconds. But look, this is what you have to remember. And I'm going to say this about Strada Bianca too, which is the competition, okay? You've got to take this all into account. Now, what I do like, and you know, watching the Greg LeMond stuff, kind of have a remembrance back to the good old days, which guys would come into the season, they would take forever to be fit, and you'd have different riders do different things, but it wouldn't be your Grand Tour riders. It's different now. You know, Lance took that to a different degree, and by the way, you know, motor doping probably, but but it was always, his point was, I'm always 10% off of where I really need to be, the ultimate fitness, so that you don't want to have your body go through all these fluxes. Granted. So it is cool to see Jonas come in and just destroy it. Now, Lenny Martinez, he's going to be a problem, I think, coming up in the future. And, you know, he's got the red jersey of the Vuelta. He won a stage race or the stage member. Oh, that was, I'm trying to remember who he beat that. The guy thought he crossed the finish line. And then Lenny comes. We can take a look at here because we'll just go to his results. Was it the trophy? I think that was recent. So it must be this Classic VAR. Classic VAR, he wins. Yeah, Tobias Johannessen kills everyone on the last climb, sits up, and Lenny Martinez does not and comes around him. So that was pretty frustrating. But he's going to be a problem because he's a pretty good climber, which means and a good racer, which means he's probably going to leave the French team and go somewhere else. But Egan Bernal, you know, he's kind of making a resurgence. My point is, it's good to see Jonas Vingegaard out front, doing what he's doing. You're seeing the same with Evenepoel. You're seeing the same with Pogacar. We'll get to him. Are you going to see the same with Roglic? That's the one we still have to see. Now, people are like, oh, but Tyler, don't forget, you had a Tour de France or a Vuelta winner in Sepp Kuss. Are we going to see that with Sepp? Sepp looks pretty good. And we'll talk about his Strada and what kind of went wrong there as well. What I think, and by the way, that's my problem with the press, is there was actually an interview with, I'm sorry, a Velo News article, and the headline was about Sepp Kuss and Quinn Simmons at the race, and so like, oh, sweet, I'm gonna get some understanding as to what the F actually happened. Now, I know what happened with Quinn, but what happened with Sepp? And they don't talk about it at all. They just say, oh, it didn't go well. Well, yeah, no kidding. Why do you ask him what went well, since you're the news guy? But that's kind of shit we get. Okay, so we had the first big race. Everyone gets jizzed up here for the first race of the season. This is Omloot Het Nieuwsblad. And we had Visma Lisebike coming out with the win with Jan Tratnik. He got in a break there at the end with Niels Pollitt. Wout takes up the field in third place. But we had our American boy here down. He was in that same group, Mateo Jorgensen. He looked really strong. He was in the break. He was just solo for a while. They were killing it with and he was had a real prominent role. And with that in mind, you can see now he's kind of the lead man for Visma Lisebike at Paris-Nice. So he looked very strong coming out there. The whole team looked great, but Jan Tratnik ends up taking the win, which was pretty impressive for them. Then the next day they have Kern at Brussels. Kern, wait, that's the junior edition. I don't know who these guys are. That's juniors. Oh, Grand Camino. There we go. A lot of races. Someone don't care. And we had the Wout win that over Wellens and Loscano. Loscano, remember we saw him on that Haiyan, the desert, the dirt race that just killed everybody, the Spanish champion. But they got in a break there with Wout and took off there. Luke Lamperti, our American boy for Lotto Soudal, comes in there at seventh place. Very impressive for him. And we'll just, you know, we'll do our normal thing where we look at the nations, the Americans. Mateo Jorgensen, once again, played a solid role. Lawson Craddock had a DNF. And Riley Sheehan, I raced with his brother quite a bit, Clark, back in the good old days in Colorado. And Riley Sheehan, he had a win last year, but he's with the Israel Permatech. He's getting a full-on chance this year, so good for him. Let's see, Brian said something else here. Can you explain the Trenor Adriatico TTT rules? I don't get it. Guys are doing a lead out for a single rider. So I've heard a few things, and I think what it is, you know, normally they take the time of the fifth rider across. So if you're the first rider across, they take the fifth or however many they determine. I think this one they're saying you get the time that you get. So if you're a single rider, you can. So which I think probably what you're talking about here, you don't have to wait for that fifth rider. You can probably bury yourself for your team leader, and then let him maybe go across with another person. And you're just it to me, it's an interesting concept, and I do like it to some extent, because even though there's a team aspect, if you've got maybe you have a shitty team. And or maybe you could, it'll be interesting strategy to see how it works when you have your GC rider that may be super strong. I mean, let's be honest. If you have a strong team, five guys or whatnot are always going to be better than just you. But now if you drop a rider, you drop another rider, maybe your team would, maybe you only have three really good riders, or someone's having a bad day. Instead of having to sit up and wait for that, you just keep going. So I am interested to see how that's going to work out. I'm all for it, because partially the team time trials can be at times. So, okay. So we had Omelette, we had Colonel Brussels Curran, we had the UAE Tour, we had La Sama, Samin. This wasn't as exciting as it's been in the years past. This is kind of like your Strada, kind of like your Paris-Roubaix, but it's in France. It came down to a sprint, and your Interwanting Marché guy, Lorenz Rex, ends up winning it over Morgado of UAE, but it's kind of that race that I do enjoy. So it was there for all of us to see. Like I said, Lenny Martinez won the Trofeo Laguiguela. That was so he's already got two wins for this season this year, and then we had Strada Bianca coming up this last week. So Strada got up. I woke up 5 o'clock because that's when it started streaming. Open up, got it on the TV. Go downstairs, make my coffee. By the way, let's pause for just a moment to enjoy. Let's see here. Do I have a slide about coffee? This is an old one. Nope, I don't have it. Well, go to foxandson.com for all your coffee needs. This is it's a sponsor of mine. If you go there, you put a code review, R-E-V-I-E-W, you get 18% off of orders of $25 or more. I drink their coffee. That's what I had in the morning. I woke up, I made myself this Brazilian honey press coffee with my espresso maker, and sat down, started watching the race. They come on TV. By the way, let's talk about Max for just a moment. You've got, used to be GCN, now it's Max. It's Disney or Discovery Plus in Europe. It used to be Orla Shinaway, and they had their breakaway, Daniel Lloyd, Adam Blythe. But then they started off with this other girl. And Orla Shinaway was whatever. But I will say this about her. I think she knows a lot about cycling. I didn't say she knows cycling. I think she knows a lot about cycling, which really helps. It helps her questions. It helps, you know, just understanding the whole dynamics. I don't think this other blonde girl knows it as much. She's a little doughy in places. I'm not a fan of some of her outfits. She's pretty. She's cute. I like that. There's just something about her that I'm just not. It's she's got a little bit of a lisp going on. I'm a little critiquing this. She was on there to begin with. So the UAE Tour and some others. I haven't seen her on there. Orla was back on the weekend. Perfectly fine. I'm glad this is happening. So we've got her. We've got Adam Blythe. He's kind of annoying. But they had Natan. What's his name? He's the guy that had the heart problems with Visma Lisa bike last year, Ben Hoydunk. He was in studio and he actually did a good job talking with me. So anyway, I come in, the race is like 90 kilometers in already. Now they extended it. It's longer than it had been. It's almost 215 kilometers. They have the last circuit that they do twice this time. So they come on here and they're talking about the race, and you can see team UAE is in the front. Quinn Simmons kind of makes a break for what reason, I don't know. They bring him back. Maybe look, I saw Chris Horner saying there's a bad move by Quinn Simmons to try to take off, especially when they're just full throttle. It's like 25, 50 or 30 guys or so left at this point, even with 90 some kilometers to go. Quinn Simmons, like I said, he tries to get up. Maybe he's trying to get up the road for Tom's Squeenge. Get up the road, maybe have a break. You know, do that kind of thing. I don't know. But they're shutting it down right quick. UAE. They have Tim Wellens. They have obviously Pogacar. There was another guy in there for them. And they just, they looked ridiculous. So it was going, they were controlling everything. But Visma Lisa bike had Attila Valter. They had Laporte. They had Christophe Laporte. They had, Was there another guy? Churches was maybe in there. But then they also had Sepp Kuss. Sepp Kuss looks very good climbing in there. Now everyone's like, ooh, one day Kuss, it's instead of GC Kuss, it's going to be the thing to be. But there was already news reports where Attila Valter's like, I'm the leader of this race. It's amazing to have Sepp Kuss working for me. So I immediately like, okay, well, Sepp isn't, I think Sepp is not the kind of guy that he's just going to take the reins if it's given to him. He's kind of like, maybe if it's there, maybe if I'm the team leader coming in, I've got this, but I just think he's still super domestique. So what happens is then they flash back to the beginning. They're interviewing Pogacar and they're like, so, you know, how'd the race, blah, blah, blah. What are you going to attack? And he says the Santa Maria. Now that's the big section that they have coming in here. I'm trying to see what, which is about 81 kilometers to go. And what does he do? You know, I've actually got a let's maybe we can pull up the video of this portion because there we go. I'm gonna just click through like I'm doing with the Tour de France. So here we go. And okay, there's Bora. They've got look at here's the route. Nice. Okay. Race starts off. But by the way, UAE was just controlling things from the start. They weren't letting hardly anything go. Very dominant from there in their part. Let's see if I could Isaac Del Toro. Remember, he did good down in the Tour Down Under. He was also up there for UAE and it looked very good. Quinn Simmons is there. You got Sepp Kuss on here, but they come into this. This is when the race starts, where they start broadcasting around 93 kilometers to go. There was a downpour and you're like, ugh, these wet roads, you're usually seeing all the dust fly up, but instead you're seeing some stuff coming in. What 81 kilometers to go. And this is on the big section, sector eight here, 8.5 kilometers on this section. It's got and what you had seen, they'd already seen them coming up. There was a bit of a climb. Then they have this down and you can look right here where this is at. Look at the spacing between all these riders. Now, sure, Pogacar is taking off, but even then when Sepp Kuss was like second, third wheel, there's just little gaps everywhere. If it's with single riders out here and Pogacar just hits it. I saw Sepp Kuss kind of going after him, but then looking back. Now, Attila Valter is, we could probably even count, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 back, but he's like 30 seconds back just being in the pack here. Or maybe not that far. It's probably like 5 seconds, but he's way out of position. Okay, so I know this is your guy. And Christophe Laporte, he's back here too. I mean, no one's in position. Any else? Where's Pidcock? I mean, let's look at some of these gaps here that are just so unnecessary. And so there you go. And with 80 kilometers, they don't see him for the rest of the day. He's gone and forgotten. It's done and dusted. He immediately, you get Van Gils, the Lotto rider, takes off and he tries to bridge up to him. He's not making the gap. He's off for like 10 minutes. Then the group starts to chase up. They're catching him up. And there's, you can see Roman Bardet here attacks. And this attack here was strange because what happened, maybe it's not this one. This was 40-something to go. It was back still within the first, I want to say 70 kilometers to go here. What happens is there's a bunch of guys, and none of the Visma Lisa bike guys make it up there. Laporte misses it. Attila Valter misses it. Tom Squeens gets in a bike crash with Quinn Simmons, goes down. Squeens has to chase, and he chases hard. He catches over the top of the hill. They're coming into one of these other sectors, and Mr. UAE Pogacar has now got, you know, almost 2 minute lead. And I could look back there, and it looks like Sepp Kuss does a lot of work to get Laporte and Attila Valter back to the group. He sits up. Zach Del Toro sits up. They have a loop that they come into, and so you never see any more of Sepp Kuss. Now, I'll say Nilsson Paulus also mentioned that he was closing the gap. This is a news report. He was closing the gap between him and Matthew Vanderpoel and Wout. Now, I don't know if that's true, but he was up in this group, blew out his derailleur, I guess. Day's done and over. He had actually finished it out there. Tom Squeens goes up, catches up to the group. He does amazing work. And, you know, then Ineos is starting to chase. And they're chasing for like 10 minutes and then they're done and no one else is doing it. And when you saw the group there, you know, when he taxed 80 kilometers to go, but there's maybe 25 guys in there, even though you have teams, the Visa Lisa bike missed the move. So they've got a chase to get back up there. There's all these dynamics that it's these dirt roads with these climbs. It's not conducive for, you know, full on pacemaking. It's a perfect scenario to have a rider like Pogacar continue on. Van Eedvelt tries to take off with Van Gils, his teammate, the two Lotto riders. They don't get it, but eventually they do. Van Gils goes up the road, and Tom Squeens ends up bridging up to him, which is very impressive. And then it was just a boring race. I mean, I said at one point, I'm like, I bet he'll win by 2:45, and that's really what he did. Comes across the line, he does the old bike spike, he being Pogacar, and then Tom Squeens starts getting distance on the bottom of the climb by Van Gils, and then he claws his way back, attacks over the top, and comes in for a really, really impressive second place for Tom's Squeens. Over Van Gils. Tom Pidcock ends up making a move there. Matej Mihoric, Benoit Cosnefroy, Davide Formello, Lenny Martinez, Filippo Ganna, Christophe Laporte. I think that was on like 12 that actually officially finished. And that's because they have the circuit. And so it's just like, what's the point? Victor. Yes, Tyler is live. Sorry, I didn't give you good notice on this. Sepp initially went after Pog, but then sat up. Was he waiting for... I think that's what he was doing, Brian. He was waiting for Attila Valter. I don't know if he had the best legs anyway, because it looked like to me then when those guys, when that separation happened, and that happened with the main group, and there was like, you know, 10 riders up the road, and Visa Lisa Bike missed it completely. They chased hard to catch back on. Laporte and Attila Valter both did in one of these sections. They caught him back, and I think Sepp Kuss did a lot of work getting them back up there to that. And then, you know, his day's done. It's what it is. It's what it is. So there you go. What do we got coming up here for any other races? So we have right now, Trentino Adriatico is going on. That's in Italy. They started that one off today with an individual time trial. Juan Ayuso of UAE wins that. That'll be interesting because look at the start. We'll just go to the start list here. And we'll kind of look at just some of the riders that are in there. I mean, you've got some sprinters. It's actually, you know, decent sprinters there, but for Bora, you've got Jai Hindley, so that'll be an interesting to see how he ends up doing. I think who's in here? Vinigo is up here too. So it's got some, you know, you either hear Julian Alaphilippe's out here. I think he's drinking a lot. That's what his team boss is saying, at least. Juan Ayuso, it'll be interesting to see how he does for UAE. Who else do you got here? Roman Bardet, maybe Kevin Vermaaker for DSM will be interesting to see how he does. Enric Mas is making his big race. Chris Froome for Israel Primatech. I think big things happening for him this year. Gael Tao Gegenhardt for Little Trek. You know, good chance for him here. Magnus Sheffield, I wouldn't mind seeing him kind of coming through for Ineos. Richard Carapaz, Nelson Palas. So solid grouping here. And then, of course, you have over at Paris-Nice, you had a sprint day yesterday. Olaf Koy won, and today Arvid Decline won that one. But let's look at the start list with this one, too, because this one is billed out really to be the Primoz. That's his first race. And then Evenepoel, Sudal. But then you've also got McNulty, Jai Hindley. I'm sorry, Joao Almeida, Finn Fisher-Black over there for the UAE team. They're looking good. David Gaudu, I don't know if this is his debut, but I haven't seen him do much yet this year. Mateo Jorgensen is leading the team. Egan Bernal. So Felix Gall, Mads Pedersen, he's not going to be for overall. Who do we have for? We got Jayco Alulu there. Dylan Groenewegen. Rigoberto Urán over here for EF. Pell Bilbao for Bahrain. Will Bart out there for Movistar, but probably Ruben Guerrero for their lead. Jakob Fuglsang and Fabio Jakobsen for DSM, but Fuglsang for Israel. Other than that, that's pretty much it. So, I mean, look, the real battle there is Primoz Roglic and our boy Evenepoel. So I'm looking for that one. Last thing here, Brian says, are you going to be in shape for Snelling Road Race in June? I hope so. I'm doing my best as I drink beer. Look, Brian, you might like this. This is my wife got this. It's called Mandela Effect, I guess. I think that's Hen House. So it's got chickens on it. It's a chicken beer. I don't know. It tastes pretty decent. I plan to. I'm trying to get back in shape, Brian. I'm riding. My back is finally good. I'm here. So also, I did have a different podcast. It's, you guys wouldn't enjoy it. It's all about politics, mostly, and dick jokes. But I was able to do this last weekend, go out the weekend before. I was down in Southern California, and I did in-person interviews, which is what we used to do for this show. I miss them highly. So at some point, I'm going to plan on trying to go to the races again, do some interviews, because that actually is a lot of fun for me. And I think everyone enjoys it. So anyway, thanks for joining us tonight. We will be back next week to recap Paris-Nice and Turin-Adriatico. And then you've got Milan-San Remo. Predictions? How do you go against Pogacar? Matthew Van Der Poel. Wout. It should be fascinating. Maybe Matej Mohoric again. I don't know. Maybe we'll have to do a midweek thing on that. All right, everybody, take care.